You're listening to Brumpod, the podcast for small businesses by small businesses, discussing the topics that matter to you, including marketing, networking, generating business awareness, as well as covering various business tools and technology. Brought to you by Brummies Networking, the home of free, stripped-back business networking. Produced by AudioShed Podcast Studio. Welcome to episode 65 of Brumpod. I'm Richard Heathcote, and I'm here with Jason Jones.
Hello.
And a very special guest. And this guest is very special in the sense that I've had to write a load of questions asking her all about her and her life and the project that she's undertaken. But I know all the answers already because she's been my bestie of 17 years and counting. So welcome, Samantha Fitzgibbons.
Thank you very much. What a lovely introduction that was.
I mentioned and counting because, you know, it's not like we're just ceasing our friendship right now.
I was going to say, because that's the, that is the end of our friendship. This is it. It was always about to end in a Brumpod episode. It was inevitable. Look, it was a lovely greeting.
Yeah. 17 years is pretty good for a friend that wasn't imaginary.
Well, exactly, yes.
Yeah, I am imaginary, but we won't mention that. Well, no, prior to all of that, that was a very lovely greeting. Thank you. Went a bit south, but it went started south. Very well.
It went a bit bleak, but we're back on track now. And Sam is the author of her debut novel called Happy State. So we're going to be talking about creating a happy state by asking the author herself. So firstly, just tell us a little about your background. Describe the path that got you to where you are now.
Right. Well, it's quite diverse, to be honest. I originally trained as an actress, as you well know. Mm-hmm. And so I was always into the sort of creative side of things, you know, and while acting was wonderful, it was wonderful. It's just so horribly unpredictable and unstable. And I could throw out so many words to describe it. The work itself is wonderful, but the rest of it, not so good. So, I guess I was always writing. I never stopped. And it was like many things in life. It was one of those things that I was always doing, but I never gave it any sort of, you know, I never took it seriously. And it was only one day that somebody sort of said, you know, we're all looking for our why in life. We're all looking for our, what can I do that will, you know, that will fulfill me entirely. And I don't know who said it, but someone just said, well, you've been writing for years and you seem to enjoy it. And I thought, crikey, yeah, I have. I've written so many different things, none of which have been published. But I'd just always been doing it. So I guess it was already there. With Happy State, it emerged from an experience, I guess. Yeah, I mean, it was to do with mental health, very long story short, and wasn't feeling so great. Took a visit to the doctors who, ordinarily, NHS, wonderful, absolutely wonderful. But unfortunately, at the time, we're going back sort of, you know, 10 years or so. Unfortunately, I was sort of told, you know, oh, it's just anxiety. It's fine. You know, just go and Google a bit of mindfulness. Wow. Okay. And I just remember over the course of time, having had a few appointments very similar to that, I just remember saying, gosh, it's almost like they're trying to wipe mental illness out. And somebody said, you should write a book about that. And there we go.
And over the years, you've transferred this writing ability that you clearly have got as being a copywriter for other businesses. So how has the process been from transferring those skills into creating a novel? Is there any crossover or has it been a bit of a learning curve?
Well, that's very kind of you to say, so thank you very much. A huge learning curve, immense learning curve, because when you're writing your own story, the word I use is flowery. You're just very, very flowery. I'm so grateful that several years ago I did a psychology degree because I had to learn how to sort of deflower my writing. That sounds a terrible
use of phrase. That sounds really awful.
Yeah, it does. It really does. What a terrible turn of phrase I just used. Yeah, so I had to stop. And I had to, obviously, with it being a science, I had to completely change my style of writing. And I'm so grateful for that, because it taught me to write in shorter sentences. And yeah, I mean, copywriting is a whole different thing. It's shorter. It's more to the point. It's about, you know, getting the point across a lot more quickly. Yeah, it's removing a lot of the creative side of things, you know. What can take a page in a fictional story can take two sentences, you know, in a piece of copywriting. So you really have to use, you know, the different parts of your brain to get that right. So yeah, it's been challenging. And I don't think you ever stop learning that either. I think you just continue to learn from your mistakes as you go.
Yeah,
kind of like movies explained in short sentences. Where
precisely.
You take the So without probing too deeply, a lot of books along this sort of genre, they talk about the fall and then the rise, because really that's what people are interested in, is they want to see themselves rising. So how much of this would you say focuses on where you were and where you've come from and where you are now?
In terms of the mental health side of things, the book itself, crikey, so much happened during the course of that book in terms of my own personal sort of development, for want of a better word, as well as the way society changed. When I started writing this book, it was still very much a taboo subject, mental illness. As my book progressed, suddenly everywhere, people are talking mental illness. It's everywhere, absolutely everywhere. That has definitely featured in the book, just the rise of you know, I guess it's the understanding of what's really going on, not in terms of there being an enormous conspiracy in the real world, but certainly in the story, it opens up, as did my own personal journey. So yes, I guess the rise correlates perfectly with both my own journey and the way society has completely advanced.
And over the years, because you started writing it quite a long time ago, mm-hmm. it's ended up somewhat mirroring events that have happened over the last few years. So how does it feel, knowing that in part it's gone from the realm of complete fiction to not quite so fiction?
Would mildly terrifying suffice? Yeah, well, it's so terrifying in that as I started writing, I kind of started going on about this divide of the nation, and I'm reading all different books for research, and I'm going everywhere I can to really get into mindsets, and then suddenly, not suddenly, but Brexit occurs, and we have this immense divide with the public, and I just remember thinking, crikey, my research has got so much easier because I only need to look at a news channel and it's feeding me all this information. And then, you know, I start talking about, further down the line, I start talking about curfews and lockdowns and martial law, and, well, I think you can guess what happened next in reality, COVID. And yeah, it kind of got a bit terrifying. It sort of got to a stage that I thought, I don't want to write anything else because I'm really scared of what might happen.
Burn the witch.
I'm really
like
scared.
It might be like Black Mirror, you write it and then it happens.
Well, I've sort of indirectly become a psychic, and it's a little bit terrifying. So anything else I write, yeah, I really don't want to turn anything else into Black Mirror.
So because of all the mirroring of events, let's have a bit of a rundown of the synopsis of what Happy State's all about.
Yeah, certainly. It's set in the near future, not too distant future, 2029. It's dystopian in nature, and I didn't want it too far in the future because I wanted it to have an element of, wow, this could actually happen, not realising it really, really could happen. So it's set in essentially a broken United Kingdom. In steps a new government, and they aptly entitle what was the United Kingdom the Happy State. And it's with a view to placing well-being, health, general happiness at the forefront of the agenda for its people, which all sounds lovely it sounds great. But obviously, in true dystopian style, there are dark overtones, as usual. And the objective is to eradicate mental illness in all of its forms and create a purist race, i.e. a happy race. So it's about, yeah, the elimination of anything that might have an impact on the happiness of people in the future. So we've got a lot of eugenics in there and just about wiping out the bad, really. So it's a happy story.
Well, yes. Did it come about before or after the happiness survey that David Cameron, then Prime Minister, created?
He mentioned that. He first mentioned that because, do you know, it was one of the first things I looked into. He mentioned that several years ago. I sort of had to dig for that because it was so buried within the internet because of how much good it did. I had to really search for it. And it was a long time ago. I couldn't give you a year, but it was a long time ago that he did mention that. And I think that had always sort of lingered in my mind. I remember doing something at university and that was touched on about the happiest places in the world. And I remember that being touched on. And I think, you know, funny you mention it, because subconsciously that was always sat at the back of my mind. So,
It's only just something it just sprang back to mind because I'd forgotten all about it. And then it just went, yes, I remember that from whenever it was.
I think it was a mere comment he made. I think it stopped there.
Yeah, I would like whether it ended up being a proper nationwide survey. This happiness survey, but
I know there was talk of it.
Or did it actually
happen? No,
I don't know anymore.
No, you definitely didn't dream it. It was a real thing because, like I said, it stuck in my mind. I know he certainly talked about he wanted a happy state that focused on the happiness, and he looked at certain countries around the world that were happy with very little. Vanuatu was certainly, I think, quite often comes up at the top, doesn't it? But yeah, he did. He did mention that, and I think he went and had a cup of tea at that point.
Yeah, well, happiness is a subjective term.
Of course it is.
And you get, I mean, LinkedIn is awash with people that say, you know, posts that say positivity is a choice, not an outlook. But it's also got to be tempered with the fact that you need a degree of realism.
Of course you do.
Yeah, it's about trying to take the positive from the situation versus being blindly ignorant of how serious something can actually be. And yeah, it's how you find that happy medium.
Do you know, I couldn't agree more, Jason. And it's interesting because at the start of my book, in the prologue, I've actually written a bit about happiness. And one of the things that I mention is that it's actually quite often a retrospective emotion that we have. It's very rare that we're in the moment and think, I'm really happy. We don't do that. We tend to look back and think, crikey, I was really happy at that point. It's got so many layers to it. You could probably talk about this for hours, if not days, you know.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of networking, it does work. I mean, one of the clients I'm currently working with, one of the great compliments I got was they said, it's great that we can come to you with whatever and there's an air of positivity. Because, for example, they would come in and there'd be revisions to the plan or something has changed. And before they were afraid of, you know, being met with a negativity as, oh, God, now we're going to have to change everything. Whereas you say, well, actually, this is better because it now means we can reschedule this and change this. It puts you in a better position. So now this is good. You know, keep telling me stuff like that.
Do you know, Jason, I couldn't agree. I could not agree more with that. Absolutely. It is about seeing the good. I mean, there will always be moments, of course, that things will become inconvenient to us. Of course, that goes without saying. But it is, you're absolutely right. It's how you approach them, isn't it? And I think largely it's about how you make other people feel as well. You know, you can throw the guilt trip on and you know, or you can just sort of, like you said, spread a bit of positivity. So, yeah, that's a huge compliment to you for that.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been a glass half empty kind of person because that's just basic grammar. It's not half empty or half full. If it was full and you drank half, it's half empty. If it was, you know, empty and you half filled it, it's half full. You know, it's not about perspective. The only time it actually works is when it's pub logic, because if your glass is half empty, it means you've had half a pint, which is great, and you've got another half to go. And if your glass is half full, well, that's a short measure, and you need to have a word with the landlord.
Do you know what? What a great, absolute, I love it. Yeah, what a great way of looking at it. It's always a good thing. Yeah, it's always a positive, isn't it?
Yeah, but you do find that with a lot of business networking, it's sort of, people try to be overly positive when what they really need to be is more realistic. If you're going out networking, yes, you don't necessarily want to tell people you're doing bad, but if you're going in with an air of over positivity, then people might think, oh, well, you don't need this referral, you know, because you're busy enough. And it's about having that balance of honesty and pragmatism and not being overly negative.
Do you know, yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, it can get quite mind-numbing, can't it? Sometimes I know certainly on platforms like Instagram, you can scroll through, as we do, and you're absolutely bombarded with all of these different messages about, you know, seize the moment, you know, don't worry about the future. And while they're all so wonderful and oh, yeah, I should be seizing the moment, you know, it really isn't as straightforward as seizing the moment, dropping everything you do and just going and having this, like, wonderful life. You're absolutely right. It's not realistic. And I think by encouraging too much optimism, Rich and I have had conversations about this, haven't we?
Yeah.
I'm very much a what is apparently called a defensive pessimist. So I will look at a situation and I will consider what might go wrong in it, and I will have contingencies. And I remember you and I, Rich, had a conversation, and it can be looked upon as being slightly negative, but actually it's just being fully prepared, realistic that, well, this might happen. And so I want to have contingencies, you know, and actually it's just about, I just think it's about really good organisation, to be honest. Maybe I'm wrong.
Until it goes into the realm of, oh, should we go out for a drive? Yeah, but what if the wheel falls off?
Yeah, well, there is that, of course. Yeah, what if my wind mirror flies off? What if my gear stick stops working? Yeah, of course. But I do agree with what Jason said. You can be overly optimistic about things. This is all going to be fine. This is all going to be fine. And I think you do sometimes just need to be realistic. You know, if you're going up a ladder with, like, one shoe on, I think, you know, maybe have a contingency, like a soft mattress at the bottom. Or a helmet, you know, good contingencies.
But there's planning and over-planning. Your drive one is actually not entirely unreasonable. You're going to go out for a drive, or what if your wheel falls off? Well, if you get a puncture, you've got a spare. If your wheel actually falls off, you've got roadside assistance.
There are
things you can do to mitigate a risk without becoming overly, planning for the most ridiculous. You know, you wouldn't line a stepladder with a load of mattresses in case you fall. You'd basically just wear the appropriate footwear, follow the instructions. You know, that's how you work. And again, it's the same with positivity. You know, it's a case of there's a reasonable amount, there's an excessive amount. There's also the same with a lot of negativity.
So back on Happy State, what is one of the most surprising things you've learned in creating this book?
Yeah, it would have to be the writing element of things. You're constantly learning and evolving as an author, that goes without saying, as a copywriter equally. I think the fact that I thought I knew a lot more than I did about grammar, basic grammar, and, you know, working with an editor, suddenly she'd say things like, you know, I'd have little red circles. And I'd say, that's perfectly fine. What's wrong with that? And she'd say, no, you don't write that. And I realised, you know, just things like hyphens, things, crikey, the smallest things that I've been doing for years that I considered were the way they should be. So I've learned a huge amount. I don't think you ever stop learning that. I've also learned slightly how to write a blurb, but I will still always find it impossible. Yeah, I've upped my game probably about 2% with writing a blurb, because how do you condense a story that is 378 pages into 3 paragraphs?
Yes, I was waiting quite a while for that while we were doing the cover. And it took about the same time as you writing the book to write the blurb.
Do you know, that was the... I remember, Rich, because you and I were working together on it, and I remember you kept saying, right, it is time now for you to send me the blurb. And I just kept procrastinating and making every excuse under the sun. Yes, 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 I'll get that done, I'll get that done. I actually had full-on fear. It was a phobia of, like, blurb phobia. It's honestly terrifying. I just thought, this is the make or break, isn't it? You know, you read a blurb, you go into a shop, you pick up a book, you look at the cover, you turn it over. The blurb is the, I'll buy it or I won't. And so I was like, how do you do it? How do you condense it? I think so many writers would probably share that feeling. I'm sure. It's so difficult. Yeah.
And how have you found the feedback from people that have read it already? It's been out now for just over a month. So it came out on July the 8th, I believe.
Correct. Yes, it did.
So how's the feedback been so far?
Do you know, I am honestly, again, something else I was really scared about. A lot of people were saying, this is the best part now. This is the time to get really excited. For me, it was actually the most nerve-wracking because you've put so much time and effort into what becomes your baby, really. And you're putting it out there for judgment, essentially, aren't you? And it's fine for people to say, don't worry about what people say. It doesn't matter. You've done this. This is an accomplishment. If only it were that easy. You know, I guess it's like having kids, isn't it? Probably, you know, you want everyone to see what you see in your kid. And if anyone doesn't, you know, you've got something to say about it. But I am so blessed that I've had the most wonderful feedback so far. And particularly on the mental health front, so many people that have had problems with mental illness have come forward and said, you've dealt with it very sensitively. And it's something I can relate to. And crikey, that I wasn't expecting that. That, you know, that has meant the absolute world for people to say that. So, yeah, I'm absolutely delighted. Really, really pleased.
That ties in nicely to my next question, actually, because I was going to ask you, were there any segments or chapters in Happy State that were particularly hard to write, or sections that were difficult to ensure they either felt right or flowed correctly or along those lines?
I would say most of the book was difficult, you know, to a degree, because it's about, you've just said it, getting it to flow. So getting the chapters in the right order, they changed around so many times. It's quite funny that, I know this isn't what you asked me, but one chapter that came quite easily was when they visit the Freedom headquarters, and you've got the music and you've got the atmosphere. And for the first time in such a long time, all of these young people are coming together, doing something that has been denied for so long. During lockdown, that was actually quite an easy one to write, because I could really get into their heads of, you know, we've all been denied so much stuff, and we clung on to the smallest things, didn't we, for a bit of joy, whether it was music or gardening or just nature, whatever. Going for a walk suddenly became the new event. You know, it was suddenly an amazing thing to do, to go for a walk. So that chapter really flowed. I would say difficulty, I'd probably have to say the torture chapter, because funnily enough, it's not something I know a great deal about.
Sure.
You know,
I've got 17 years of
shocker, shocker, shocker alert, but actually, yeah, don't know too much about it. So yeah, I had to do a lot of research for that. And, yeah, that wasn't the easiest. But in terms of getting things to flow, I think that's continual. It's always difficult, and you'll never be happy. If I read the book now, I'd probably, you know, highlight three quarters of it.
Sure.
Were there
not
any bits where you actually said that's staying as it is? You dug your heels in and didn't let the editors make changes.
Do you know, that's really funny. The two chapters that I was adamant, they weren't even chapters actually. The two points were the very first part of the book and the very final part of the book, and I said, please don't change that unless it's grammatical. Unless I've done something incorrect, please don't change it. That's how I want it. And I knew that I wanted it exactly in that format. Do you know that there are probably so many parts, Jason, that I could go through and cry about. I think every author would be the same. I sort of, when I pick up my book, I do it very tentatively, and I sort of just peer at the corner because I think, I dread to think what I might read, because we're all our worst, we're all our harshest judges, aren't we? Our harshest critics, and
yeah.
You're forever...
I think I'm awesome.
Well, you should write a book then. You should write a book and just read your book over and over. There you go.
I'm just immune to criticism, so.
God, I tell you what, if that were a thing, if that could be put into tablet form, I'd buy it, absolutely. Do you know, it's not even about critics. It's about just, you know, when you hear your voice back sometimes and you sort of... you think, oh, good Lord, on a voicemail or something, and you, oh, crikey, do I sound like that? It's very much the same with a book.
Wait till you hear this podcast.
Yeah. I won't. See, that's the point. I won't listen to it because of that very reason. I'll think, oh, my God, my voice, my dulcet tones, no.
But, yeah, it is difficult judging your own work. And, yeah, you never feel like it's ready enough.
What was a great line of
art, where they say, art is never finished. It just, you know, it just gets into a state where you're prepared to let it go.
Do you know, that's funny you say that, Jason. My editor said exactly that. She quoted that to me because when she'd done the final edit, I actually requested, I said, can I just read it back? And she just put her foot down and said no. She just said, Sam, we're not going to get anywhere if you do that. And I was sort of pleading slightly, please send it back to me. And she said, no, we've been there. We've done it. We've spent probably most part of a year, really. It's a long process. And I'd have had it back and I'd have changed so much stuff. I know I would. It wouldn't have even been called Happy State anymore. It would have, whole thing different. So, yeah, you're spot on. You have to just get to a point where you think, I'm never going to be 100%, but I've got to let this go now.
My contented state is not going to really fit on the book cover either.
No, it's not. No, yes.
Not if they charge by the letter.
Angsty state, yeah. But yeah, quite. No, you're right, you have to just let it go eventually and just do a bit of praying to whoever you pray to, really.
Exactly. So how do people get their hands on a signed copy of this?
It's available, you can order it from Waterstones and you can get it from Amazon. And there's several other online bookshops as well, but they're the two main ones anyway, for the time being.
And it's in Kindle form as well.
Yes, it is.
So I got mine on Kindle.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big fan of supporting Waterstones always. They have had a few difficulties recently, bless them. Their deliveries are taking slightly longer, only about 2 months. Bless them.
Any plans to release it as an audiobook? If you can find the right narrator?
Point. There was a silence there, wasn't there? Radio silence. Oh, I wonder who could do that. Do you know any voiceover artists, Jason?
I don't do audiobooks.
You will do an audiobook. if we talk you into it, I'm sure you would. I'd love to have it as an audiobook. I'd love to do it. Rich.
Fine, we'll talk.
And it's fun. No, it's fun because do you know the funny thing is, as I'm writing, you know, I've got this thing about accents. I love accents. I kind of, they have accents, my characters do. I don't always know a great deal about them apart from that, but I love them to have accents. So you can just throw in all your accents as well. You know, you can even do female voices. You know, you can do whatever you want.
There's probably laws against that these days. I don't know.
What about doing accents?
Oh, well, Don, yes, I'm sure there's going to be acceptability issues about that now.
Oh, good Lord.
To be fair, there's only four in his repertoire, so, you know, once he's burned through all those. If he does the same four accents in a female voice.
True.
Yeah. And you do a particular... I tell you what, I've just had a great idea.
Don't.
Rich does. He does certain accents that are absolutely brilliant. Rich does. Let me have a think. He does a great Terry Wogan. He does a cracking Alan Carr. He does a superb Bob Geldof.
Which definitely.
More recently, we've got a Morgan Freeman. So do you know what? I see this in the audiobook. Let's have them. Let's throw in Bob Geldof. Let's have Terry Wogan leading the country. Let's even have Morgan Freeman.
Well, that answers another question of, yes, if Happy State was made into a movie, who would you have playing your lead characters? What a disparate load of characters.
Well, you is the simple answer, isn't it? You would play them all. With your voices, you would do them all.
Terry Wogan, Morgan
Freeman. Yeah.
And Alan Carr. I mean,
and Bob Geldof. I don't know. Yeah.
It's going to be like that Eddie Murphy movie where he played all of the main characters.
Yeah, I think it could be. Yeah, I think it could be. And if it was made into a film, well, Rich could just do a one-man show, couldn't he? I mean, that'd be even better. But, you know, I think get him in. If you've got it, flaunt it, Rich. Seriously, I think you do a cracking job. In answer to your question, who would I have? I'm going to give you a really boring answer now to this, I'm afraid. Coming from an acting background, I would actually like to use a lot of very talented but relatively unknown people, with a little hint of Michael Sheen. Not that I've thought about this.
No.
Michael Sheen has to appear somewhere.
I think that's a good choice.
Yeah. He could even play the main female. Stir things up a bit. I don't know.
He could.
He's good enough. He's honestly good enough. He could play, yeah. He could play a leading, strong female, couldn't he? There we go. It was Rich as his Terry Wogan co-star. Yeah. Terry Wogan as his as his main man. Can you do any, I don't know if you can do any impressions, Jason. If you can, chuck him in.
Oh no, I've got no, I can do Darth Vader, that's about it.
There we go. We'll have him. Honestly, the more the merrier. Chuck him in. Can you do Chewbacca? If you can do Chewbacca, that's a win.
Only in extreme circumstances. We're going right back to the torture now, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. Absolutely. Yeah, we are. We are, I'm afraid.
And knowing the state of your bookshelf, right, because I've seen it, and okay, to many people it would probably be terrifying, types of books do you enjoy reading? And are there any books or authors in particular that inspired you to want to write your own?
Yeah, you kind of answered that for me, Rich. My bookshelf, as is my virgin planner, quite terrifying. I've got a husband who craves for things like, can we please just watch something like Bridget Jones, please? We've got a major role reversal and me just watching crime, and my books are very much the same. True crime, and I've got a whole lot of Charles Manson. I've got, you name it. Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of crime in the collection. I've always loved dystopian. I think is it a cliche to say George Orwell, 1984, yeah. Ray Bradbury, Fahrenheit 451? Always been drawn to the concept of something greater is at play. And I just wasn't quite used to it actually occurring while, you know, you were writing it. Hunger Games, it might seem like the slightly, I don't know, cheesy option, shall I say. But it's a wonderful story. Absolutely. The way she sort of did that fusion of war and reality was absolutely incredible. Yeah. I think that's a great game. More recently, Christina Dalcher has been writing some great dystopian with Vox and Q, Femlandia. Yeah, it's actually not that easy to get your hands on a good modern dystopian book, actually. So we need more of it, definitely.
Absolutely. And I've got to say, this is going to sound like such a biased thing now, but I read it and I often take a little while to get through various books, but I got through this really quite quickly for me because I loved it.
Oh, good. I was going to say, because it was that bad. It was like, quick read. Done. Yeah. 10 minutes. Gone.
Just scan read each page.
Yeah, I did a quick skim. Brilliant. Oh, that was great. Yeah. I love that. I love that bit at the top of page 11. That was excellent. Yeah, highlighted. Yeah, chapter 96. But there aren't that many chapters, Rich. Oh, I didn't. Yeah, you know what I mean. No, honestly, thank you. I remember you said that to me at the time, and I was sort of blown away by that. I'm so grateful.
When you get glued to it every night. I was literally going to bed and staying up until about 2 a.m. because I was just thinking, oh, one more chapter. And at least on the Kindle, it sort of tells you how long it's going to take to read each chapter based on how often you get through each page. And it was like, if it was just like, oh, 12 minutes in the next chapter, yeah, I'll just do one more. So it's only 12 minutes. And then, of course, that carries on until you get to about 2, 3 a.m. and yeah, I probably should sleep now.
But honestly, that is such a compliment. Such a major compliment. When you get that compliment from people you know, it's... you know, it means a lot. So honestly, I'm so over the moon. Thank you.
I won't reveal the ending, obviously, but based on the ending,
the bit where everybody dies.
Yeah, that. Yeah. Then I now need the sequel. So if you can get that over to me by next week, that'd be great. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem at all. I shall try not to take another sort of 7 years, and try not to, sort of.
Please get the sequel out, because I love the fact he's got a new book to talk about, because I was sick of hearing how hungry that caterpillar was.
Oh, absolutely. And it keeps him quiet, doesn't it, Jason? Yeah. Which is an absolute added bonus. So if I can keep doing that to make you, you know, you're out there spreading the positivity, Jason. We need to keep you, you know, in a good mindset. So I shall keep Rich occupied by just throwing out the odd novel, you know, every month? Yeah, that's fine.
A Hungry, Hungry Caterpillar is a mostly underrated drama. People don't even understand how good it is.
The Hungry Caterpillar was excellent.
Yeah, and the Magic Fire.
Excellent. Oh, God, that was one of the best, wasn't it? The Magic, although the names have been changed, haven't they? Because I don't know if you remember, I don't want to say it, but the original names were chuckle-worthy, weren't they?
Yes.
Yeah, they were quite chuckle-worthy. Somebody was having a bit of a laugh when they added those in.
I thought you were going to say the names were to protect the innocent.
Well, they kind of were in some respects. Yeah, well, they kind of, yeah. I mean, that's not untrue. If you knew the names, yeah, you'd kind of get it. But yes.
Yeah, and if you don't, I'm sure Wikipedia is your friend.
Absolutely, yeah. I don't know what they've changed them to, but yeah, they were... I remember being a young girl and sort of giggling at the names. So, don't know how we got onto that topic.
From the Hungry Caterpillar to the Magic Faraway Tree, back to Happy State.
So yes.
As we've said, it is available at Waterstones and Amazon and several other places, and I'm sure any other indie bookshops as well, if they can, I'm sure they can order it in as well if they don't.
Yeah, definitely. I'd love it to be in anywhere like that. Supporting independent all the way, yes.
Well, I think that pretty much wraps up episode 65. So, Sam, thank you ever so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
And as mentioned, the book is available in a multitude of places, including Amazon and Waterstones. And I thoroughly recommend that you pick up a copy, because if you like dystopian anything, then you're going to like this. And thank you for listening, and we shall see you next time.
You've been listening to Brumpod, the podcast for small businesses by small businesses. Brought to you by Brummies Networking, the home of free, stripped-back business networking. Produced by Audioshed Podcast Studio. Follow us on Twitter, at Brumpod. You can follow and subscribe to future episodes using Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, and several other podcast platforms. Just search for Brumpod. And if you've enjoyed what you've heard, then please do consider leaving us a review. Music by Bureaucratic. We'll see you on the next episode.